Hello, everyone, and welcome to the third time I'm recording this introduction. This is the Resource Cast. I'm Jonathan Vanka, and I'm joined today by Lucas van Vuren.
Hello, all everybody at home.
Yeah, hello, everyone.
Forcibly at home.
Yeah, we are on a Zoom call again, and for the foreseeable, I think that's the way it's going to be. We are firmly self-isolating and social distancing and all that kind of thing. We're a little bit late with this podcast because, there's been a lot happening. This last week, I think everyone agreed, has been quite hectic. And we've only managed to get together now on Friday to chat. And the theme of today's podcast is going to be working from home, working remotely, how to do it effectively, how to deal with the current situation of being forced to basically work from home. But let's start with a little quick catch-up. How are you doing?
If I can, I still think it's worth looking. It's better to look at this time and be in a positive mental space and see how you can optimize. And instead of seeing the doom and gloom everywhere, at the moment, I'm doing my best to avoid the panic and just try and get the details on stuff. But again, looking at it as, let's take advantage of the time at home. If we have to be here, then let's try and figure out better ways of working. And I do think once we get out the other side of this, all our industries are going to be shook up and go like, oh, okay, again, can we save on floor space by just having people work remotely? Are people happier working remotely? That type of thing. I'm seeing the silver lining here, I hope.
When we do kind of get back to whatever the new normal is, I'm hoping that more of this remote work becomes more normal, because obviously, in my opinion, it's superior to the 9-to-5, to the traffic, to all the issues that come along with having to work in an office. But yeah, we don't exactly know how it's going to pan out yet. But how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. From my perspective, work I've been working with is gaming companies, and it's full steam ahead, it seems. I'm lucky enough to work remote anyways. This week, I met a new animator, a guy in Finland, and we're going to be doing a project together. And so I'm loving this idea. Luckily, we're on the same timeline, but how I brief and how I do things, it's way more interactive, and it moves way faster. So work-wise, I don't think I'm being affected that negatively. I think gaming as an industry is probably going to get stronger in this time as well. Once we all look back and go, because literally some of the advice from if you look at the internet, stay home, play PlayStation. So yeah. And I think, how many games have you downloaded in this time now?
I think 2 or 3, and I'm considering Doom Eternal, which has come out today and is going to make all the money.
Yeah.
Not to be cynical, timing couldn't be better.
Some industries are going to, again, looking at the silver lining, not going, yay, I'm just going, there will be unintended consequences of something like this.
Yeah,
benefits as well.
Absolutely. I think the downside for me is that all those benefits are going to be essentially sucked up by massive companies. It's going to be Steam, PlayStation, social media companies, YouTube. Like a lot of that money is going to go to the people who control the entertainment outlets, and not a lot of it is going to trickle down to the actual, I think YouTubers and stuff will be fine, but I'm thinking about a lot of friends who work in entertainment, stage, theater, dancers, that kind of thing. Like, they're not going to be seeing any of that increase. So there's going to be definitely some winners and not so winners. They're not losers, but they're going to lose.
What a PC way of putting it there.
I know, I know.
Winners and not winners.
And not winners, yeah. so gaming's obviously going to be a big one. So your industry is, I mean, the company, the clients you work for are going to be fine. On my side.
I suspect. Look, there's nothing that's definite, but
yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, on my side, one of my biggest clients is in travel. And so that's obviously kind of screwed right now. So I've definitely seen a dip in the client business I've gotten, and I've been scrambling to prospect for more, and I've been messaging a lot of people on LinkedIn, and I've been, you know, working on prospecting, trying to fill that gap. Also because my wife works in events. Those are also completely dead on every level. Yeah, it's definitely having an effect, and I'm sure everyone out there is feeling it in one form or another.
Yeah, I think I want to move on. I'm getting negative now.
Totally. So we're going to be talking about working remotely, working from home. And although I think a lot of our audience already doing that, I do feel like there might be some little tips and tricks or little ideas that you might have not have encountered before. And also, if you know someone who was formerly working in an office and has been asked to work remotely, please share this episode with them. Hopefully, they'll get some use out of it. There are a lot of...
give us feedback if we're being stupid or saying something weird. Yeah, if you have a couple of tips as well, share.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll post this in the forum. If you've got any extra tips that you want to add in, please feel free. Any resources you want to throw in there, we'll read out some resources at the end of the cast. But if you want to pitch in, please do. So let's get started with a very quick overview of, yay, this is the right time for remote working. I just want to run through this because for most of us, this is fairly obvious. But if you've just started remote working, then the silver linings again here that you can see is that the office is distracting and you're going to get more done at home. Unless your kids are home from school, in which case I'm not in that situation, but I'm sure it's going to be a challenge. But in general, I find that I'm more productive at home as long as I have my systems and my structure set out. Because when you first start working from home, you can be a mess. And I think Lucas is going to bring in a reference here. So when you first start working out, working from home, what's the first thing that kind of happens?
That insinuates it's me. But it's actually based on a Mitchell and Webb look skit about like the guy who's starting to work from home and he's prospecting and all that stuff. And the first question that someone asked him is, have you got the wanking under control? And I suppose that quickly gets cut off by, now everybody's home, so you'll have the wanking under control.
Yeah, but there is definitely, it's very easy to lose your structure, lose your schedule, and just have everything, you start waking up later, you start taking longer breaks, you start missioning off to the fridge every time you get bored, you multitask to YouTube videos, and people will do that at work as well, but someone's going to walk past their desk and have a glance at their screen, so you multitask out quickly and maybe get back to work. So there is definitely a danger of everything basically falling apart. So we're going to give you some ideas as to how to stop that from happening. You're going to be saving time and money on commuting, which is great. The technology we have now available can support remote work completely, in my mind. I don't think that there are any gaps anymore. A few years ago, we did have things like Skype, but Google Hangouts and Zoom and things like that have come a long way. The Google Suite as well, entirely for collaborative co-working, has come a long way. So I think we're in a better technological position to make it work. And then lastly, you're going to save a lot of money, whether it's through not buying cappuccinos or just not being able to go to the shops. Yeah, you will be saving some money, which is good, because I think a lot of us are basically trying to work out what's the runway here. Like, how much cash do you have? How much credit do you have? How long can you actually survive with little to no work? And how long is this whole coronavirus thing going to last? I mean, I've done that calculation. I don't know whether you have. Luke, have you sat down and thought about this?
I have, and I would be thoroughly fucked. Look, when I got ill, I realized I had to make a plan, and I did that. So I've already gone through this once, and this is like a double bomb.
Absolutely.
So I did put in buffers beforehand, access bonds and all sorts of weird things like that. That does come in handy as we go along. But these things could be considered as bad advice, because you have to batten down the hatches and just watch your spending right now.
Yeah.
That's going to be the main thing. We all should have a little bit of a nest egg put aside somewhere. But like I said, sometimes life happens, and sometimes life happens twice.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's get into some ideas and recommendations for working from home. Let's start out with setting up your space. When it comes to setting up your space, the key thing here is having a specific space to work in that you designate as the workspace. So don't do it in your bedroom. Stay away from the kitchen and the TV, the PlayStation, and other distractions. When I first started working freelance, I set up my desk with a view from the window. It was beautiful. I looked out, actually, in the time I was living in the southern suburbs of Cape Town, looking up at the mountain. And I think for some people that can work. For me, it actually... These days, my desk faces a wall in the corner of a spare room, and I have no view, and that actually helps me focus. I'm very bad at being distracted. How about you?
Unfortunately, I'm the same kind of guy. I don't like to, in my workspace, have too much to, some people put up work on the walls and for inspiration and all that stuff. Mm. I keep it blank. I have space for inspiration on my computer,
sure.
And references and stuff like that. So I don't, otherwise, because there's this thing that happened with me. I had a poster on a wall of a bunch of birds in the shape of a skull. It was, at the time, it was really nice. And I found myself doodling skulls the whole time. Right. I couldn't figure it out because you don't see it anymore, but it's ingrained in your brain. And I just found myself doodling in all our brainstorms, and after a while I was like, why am I got that? And then you know, like how your eyes adjust and you go, oh, I can see what's in front of me. There's this stupid skull thing on my wall that keeps on getting stuck. So yeah. So I prefer it, so like it blank and kind of tidy, but that's just me. I've seen other people work as well. Mm. Their spaces being super messy and they're happy that way. I just kind of keep it clean.
Yeah.
That way I don't have to try and find an excuse to clean it up. You know what I mean?
Right.
So from a dispassion point of view, I go, oh, wait, I'll start work once my desk is tidy.
Yeah, exactly. Once I filed everything away. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So on my side as well, it's pretty boring. I've got a pin board in front of me with a list of clients and next steps in projects, kind of like an old school, a Trello board, but in real life. You set up your specific space to work in, preferably in a spare room or a quiet corner, hopefully away from children and pets and the doorbell and all that stuff. If you can, set up a second screen, because I think you're going to be doing more video calls and it's really useful to have that screen going for video calls and then your work on the other. If it helps the ergonomics of your situation, if you've got an external mouse or a keyboard that you can plug into, if you've got a laptop, then plug those into the laptop and it'll just give you a little bit. It, for example, gives you the space to use a standing desk if you want to, because you're going to need an external keyboard for that. With standing desks, I know a lot of people try to use them and then fail miserably. I think the key is to alternate between using one and not using one.
When I was working, I had a standing desk and the benefits were fantastic for my lower back, especially. Mm. I had a lower back injury and it helped so much. But yes, I think if you stand for 8 hours, you're going to get problems the other way, but take breaks on that as well. But
you were pretty good with that, actually. Well, maybe it's because you had an injury.
I did it for years. Yeah. It's because the alternative was too, well, it started annoying me so much. So it was, if you get tired legs versus a sore back, there's definitely a difference.
Sure. Did you ever have one of those mats that you put on the floor that are supposed to reduce fatigue from standing?
No, I don't have that.
Yeah, I
choose. it just sounds like another gimmick, but yeah.
Yeah, apparently.
Stand on this, you'll get less tired.
I know. Look, I don't know the science behind it, but I've just seen it. Yeah, so you've got your specific place to work in. Set up your desk as ergonomically as you can. And then if you are the kind of person who wants a physical, a pinboard, a whiteboard, then or a chalkboard to plan your day and plan your work, then do that. Otherwise, for a lot of people, I'm sure, be using things like Asana or Basecamp or Trello to plan their projects. We'll talk a little bit more about digital apps a little bit later.
Yeah, please, because I don't know those names that you just said. I don't use them. I still use a notebook, so I'm a bit old school that way.
Yeah, I'll get into that because when I first started freelancing, the most recent time, you know, last May, I was going to be the perfect freelancer. I was going to use Toggle to track my time. I was going to use Xero to do my accounting. I was going to use Trello to plan my projects, all this stuff. I was going to do it perfectly, and it all fell apart within about a month. And the one thing that I managed to do is keep my subdirectory folders clean and organized, but that's about as far as it goes. But I've developed my own cheap and cheerful way of managing time and projects, which I'll talk about a little later.
So yeah. I have worked with you, and I'm pretty sure you suck at all of what you're just saying. So, but I think there is no such thing as this perfect system. I think it's all going to be a bit of a slog, but at least it attempts to kind of make life a bit easier.
Yeah, I know one freelancer who has always presented himself in the most professional way I've ever seen. He's probably kind of a type A individual in general, who's then become a freelancer. And I've always kind of admired that and wanted to be like that, but it's unfortunately just not really my style.
Is he in the creative industry?
Yeah, he's a designer. I want to interview him in the future. Jonathan Whelan, if you're listening. Yeah. Appreciate your professionalism, and I wish I could do it, but you're a failed inspiration to me.
It's like when I go through Instagram, I hate these people, but I like them so much. I hate them so much, and I like them because how are you getting your life so perfect I hate you, but it's all right. It's all right.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I say I hate those type of people, I don't mean I envy those type of people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's move on a little bit to, let's move on to focusing on your work. So now you've moved into a remote working situation, and suddenly it's the call of the fridge, the call of the TV, your dog's barking at the door. In this case, the kids are going to be a major thing that I can literally not give you any help with until a few months from now.
Hint, yeah. Hint, John's having a baby.
Yeah, exactly. Baby. Yeah. What I tend to use is something called the Pomodoro technique. It's fairly well known. And basically, they actually sell these little egg timer-like clocks in the shape of a tomato, because Pomodoro, it's an Italian technique. Pomodoro is tomato. And they're called tomato timers. And how the method works is that you break your workday into 25-minute chunks separated by 5-minute breaks. So these intervals are called Pomodoros, which is a bit silly. So what happens is that you work for 25 minutes, you take the timer goes off, you take a 5-minute break, you repeat the process 4 times, and then you take a longer break, 15 to 20 minutes. And really that'll be 4 Pomodoros, 4 30-minute sessions, 2 hours. Yeah, I mean, 2 rounds of that and you're pretty much going to be at lunch. But that's quite hard. So, I mean, the key principle here is to ignore distractions and minimize interruptions. So how the kind of process should work is that you close your email program, you turn off the sound on your phone, you put your phone on silent or on airplane mode. You set the timer, and you can use your phone. You can use an egg timer from the kitchen if you don't have one of these little tomato clocks. And you set it for 25 minutes, and it's got to have an alarm that buzzes at the end of it to let you know. And then you start working, and then when the alarm goes off, you stop, you finish the sentence you're writing, you make a note to yourself to remind you where you were, and you take that 5 minutes off. So I kind of recommend that you take a little walk around, go and get some fresh air. If you're a smoker, have a smoke, have a drink, whatever it might
don't
be.
Don't smoke. If you're a smoker, stop smoking.
Stop smoking. And yeah. When I say drink.
Use that time to remind yourself to not smoke. How's that?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And then that's the Pomodoro technique. And I find that there's also another book that we recommend called Deep Work by Cal Newport. And it also speaks about setting aside chunks of time for deep thinking and deep work and zero distractions. And part of that is making it clear to family, to people who want to call you or message you, that you are going into these phases, that you're using a technique like this, and that you can't be disturbed. It's important for your work. It's not just a quick little WhatsApp message that needs a quick response. It's not just an email that you have to shoot off. This task switching has a major, major effect on your productivity, and it can really kill your day. So, I mean, you can go so far as to set an email responder that people will get a response immediately when they email you saying, sorry, I'm working right now. I check my mail at 9 a.m, at lunchtime, and 4 p.m. You can expect a response. Then call me on my phone if you need me right now. And even then, have the phone on silent or airplane mode and call them back. As soon as you finish the Pomodoro, it's going to be a maximum of 25 minutes. They'll be fine.
My conscience starts bugging me. If I get an email come through, I want to go quickly answer it. Even if it's more personal and if it's a text, I want to get to it as soon as possible. And it's super distracting. And it's especially now where everybody's starting to send each other texts, even funny stuff, making fun of the corona stuff. It is super distracting. WhatsApp on my desktop drives me insane. Yeah. I want to take it off and maybe burn it. Just turn that shit off for now. Like we just did a bit of a build on a UX thing for website, and it took thinking. I switched everything off and I had to go and plan it out. And I know, like, doing UX is, it's actually, you start on paper, and it was so nice because I could dedicate that time to it. With digital workflow comes digital distraction.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to now see the digital version of your office worker, like your colleague walking up with a cup of coffee saying like, hey, you can see the game on the weekend or whatever it might be, you know, sports. I'm using a program called Station Now that Tessa, the founder of the resource, recommended to me. And it kind of docks your email, your WhatsApp, your Google Drive, your calendar in its own little window. And I haven't used it yet, but apparently you can kind of one-click mute all that stuff. So you can just turn it off and then you won't get those WhatsApp messages. But yeah, WhatsApp web is a dangerous one because it's so useful. You can type messages so quickly, much more quickly than on your phone. But it comes with a massive distraction. So you got to close all that stuff down. Right. So, I mean, that's a way just to keep productive during the day while you're working. But now the question is, if you are being severely affected by coronavirus, if your clients are not, you know, ordering any work, if you've got no work to do, then what do you do? So, Luke, I mean, you've had quite a lot of experience over the last few months, having gotten sick and having to spend a lot of time at home, finding ways to improve, educate, and entertain yourself while at home, besides, obviously, wanking. So, so what kind of thoughts do you have?
Once you get past the wanking, you actually get very bored. The thing was with me was I rediscovered my love for design and creativity through like movies, tutorials again, watching how people make things, even stuff that's not in my sphere. Like I started doing leather work off tutorials and stuff like that, trying to find other skills that complement my skill set, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Especially on something crafty, something you can make with your hands. So, because the problem, some of us do tend to work very digitally, and I envy people who have something at the end of the day that sits in the physical world.
Sure,
it's not an email, it's not a tweet, it's not a post that goes out and just disappears down a timeline. I used that time and went like, what is it I like, and I wanted to just pursue that.
Yeah, I think the point you make about skill, about leather work, for example, is a great example. So you're a designer, art director, creative director, and you've taken up leather working. So there's Scott Adams.
I took up leather working, ceramics, painting, all sorts, but physical stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm bragging now.
No, don't worry. Most of your work is shit. So Scott Adams, who writes the Dilbert comics and has recently become something of a podcaster and opinion haver, wrote a book called How to Fail at Everything and Still Win Big, I think. And I think one of the core philosophies inside it is skill layering. So the idea is that you say, I'm a writer. So now how can I add another layer of skills, another valuable skill on top of that to create an even more powerful combo? So in your case, a designer who does leather work is a very powerful combo for me, because I find that a lot of people working in the leather working industry don't have the level of design thinking that you might. So the kind of stuff that you were producing is nothing I've ever seen before, because you bring those other skills to it. Obviously, there are some amazing leather working designers, but you're bringing a different kind of design thinking to it. So ceramics are similar. In my case, you know, I'm a writer at my core, but I'm trying to overlay sound recording, audio production, podcasting skills on top of that, because then I can write and produce and record. And it becomes a much more specific skill set, because I find, you know, if you look at the resource, there are a lot of creatives who specialize in content strategy or digital marketing or SEO. And these are massive topics. They're, you know, and people want a specialist. They want someone. So if you don't have awards or great references or a long history of doing a thing, it's a little bit hard to sell yourself on something generalist. Whereas if you're a calligrapher and someone's looking for a calligrapher, then good, you're done, you're sold. Hence my kind of pivot towards the podcasting space.
That's been such a weird contradiction thing that happens in the industry with me. Like what I noticed was some people, they want the unicorn that's good at everything. Write, direct,
edits.
Very good at admin, produce.
Yeah.
You're the one man show type of thing. And that's all good and well. I tend to err towards that group of people when I'm working with them, because they just kind of know the bits about everything. But of course, then there are people who are really good at one thing, and then you go with them. I don't think there's a silver bullet on this one. And I think, especially with skill layering, it feels nice to have another arrow in your quiver. Is that the right expression?
Yeah.
The idea of being curious, at least. And that, I think, within the realm of not having that much to do if you're not working, it just seems like a no-brainer. Otherwise, you're just going to be staring at the contents of the fridge. It's such a dead eye look at me like,
oh, no. That dead-eyed look is because I'd multitasked out to my notes. I was staring at a Word document.
What is that word again that you just used? The skill layering. And it's interesting how giving something like such an interesting catchphrase, skill layering, multitasking.
Oh, no, you know, exactly. Like, it's like, look, I invented a word for it. Now it's a thing. It's like, it was always a thing.
Skill layering.
But the
job.
the bit that I stole directly out of a Dilbert, it's Scott Adams blog post was, if you want to do something extraordinary, you have two paths. One, you can become the best at one specific thing. Number two, become very good, top 25% of two things or two or more things. The first strategy is very difficult to the point of near impossibility. Few people will ever play in the NBA or make a platinum album. So practically, I mean, if you want to be that Japanese sword master who spends, or Jiro dreams of sushi, sushi chef who spends his entire life perfecting the art of sushi, then that's going to be very, very difficult. And unless you're incredibly passionate or incredibly talented, rather go for being in the top kind of 25% of multiple skills. I think that's a better and easier strategy, certainly.
And he only says those two things.
How do you mean?
The only two choices. If you want something extraordinary, you have two paths.
Yeah.
Become very good at something or mediocre at two things.
Well, not mediocre, pretty good or very good at two things, but top 25%. You don't have to be the best. In certain instances, like, for example, SEO, a lot of digital stuff is a perfect example of the one-eyed man is king in the land of the blind, because a lot of people are just bullshitting.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, the more I'm looking at it is like the idea of being extraordinary at something has been, he simplified it in a comedic way in these. I'm very cynical about these, like, you know how you go about doing these things and then say something really simple that's actually flippin' difficult.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, like, become very, very good. The top 25% is still be excellent.
So yeah, sure.
In the world of Olympic runners, that whole lineup, they're all world-class runners that have given up their lives to do this thing, and they're in the top 25%. So,
yeah, well, no, because that actually, that kind of serves his point. Is like, if you're a runner in the age of Usain Bolt, like, sorry for you. Like, everyone from positions 2 to 8 are never going to win a gold medal. So
never. Come on, that's not right.
No. If Usain dies, then they'll be able to win a gold medal. But no one is. I don't know if anyone's ever beaten. I'm sure someone's beaten the race.
And that's the whole point of. Yeah, that's before Usain Bolt, there was also someone who said they're never going to beat this guy.
Sure.
But yeah, it's just me being an argumentative prick right now.
Sure. So anyway, back to kind of upskilling yourself. What kind of online resources do you use for that kind of thing?
I'm a bit of a fan of the Adobe Suite at the moment. They're bringing up really good products. Shout out Adobe Suite. Sounds like a
give us money.
Give us money. But quite seriously, the Adobe XD stuff that's coming out now.
XD is that web.
It's experience design. So you can do your UX and your UI planning for websites or apps or anything like that. And they're coming out with updates all the time, and there's the support for it's been really good. So as a resource, Adobe, if you have a subscription or a work subscription, use it. Use it to upskill, because there's so many aspects of that, from a designer, art direction, writing, editing, all that stuff. I'm a big fan. YouTube is an obvious good source of tutorials. If it's been done, someone has done a little video of it. But if you're trying to find new ways of doing things, you have to experiment yourself. And this is also a good time. A lot of these videos that I've been watching, the guys go, so I had some time off, so I started playing around in this, and this is what I figured out on this thing. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Dude, use this time really well. And now I'm benefiting from that.
Sure. There are also some very well-known resources like Khan Academy, LinkedIn Learning. I think lynda.com was bought by LinkedIn Learning. And some of that content is free. Some of it requires a $30 a month subscription. Then there's Udemy, there's Coursera. So there's a lot of places, obviously, that you can then learn. I think the problem more often than not is just target blindness. There's just so much. How do you know
you've got? I think that's where the things that interest you or that complement your skill, so that the learning curve is not so high. Yeah. If I can give you some advice, because sometimes you stare at these things and you just go, where do I start? What do I, even if it's a new program or any new, like learning the piano, I'm like, I don't know where to start.
No. Yeah. I think that.
So try and find something that's easy in the beginning.
I found what I'm seeing a lot on social media over the last couple of years, and I'm sure you are as well, is the masterclass series, where it's literally the best in the world. Like David Lynch teaches you directing and Dustin Hoffman teaches you acting and that kind of thing. So those are all pretty
premium. I've seen the ads for them. Have you watched any of them? Gone through them?
No, of course not. Cost $99 or something. There's no way I'm buying that.
Isn't that amazing? I'm just waiting for someone to like
Oh, they're definitely out there. Yeah, I'm sure they're definitely out there. I've got to go. I've got some stuff to do. So I haven't tried the masterclass stuff. Certainly the pedigree of the people giving the courses is incredible. So I think it's definitely worth a look. But considering that a lot of people are going to be doing less work and getting less money in, start with the free stuff. YouTube is obviously a great reference. Yeah, so I think now is also a good time to get your own house in order. So if you, like me, are one of those people who only updates their CV, their portfolio, their website, their LinkedIn profile when you're looking for new work, then this is the perfect time to spend time doing that admin work that we often leave behind.
I might be a little bit behind. I still have a Beyonce portfolio. After each project that I liked, sometimes I was very close to it and I just upload whatever the project is I'm finished with it and then relook it and then go and edit instead of having to put up new work and have that maintenance the whole time. I was pretty good at doing that for that platform at least because it was so easy. Another shout out to Beyonce. But if there's any other better portfolio sites out there, that'd be interesting to good to know from the resource and see who else, what is there. Are you aware of any other ones?
Well, yeah, I think that the landscape of portfolio sites has exploded quite a bit now because Behance a few years ago was the place. And then now I've got a Wix site, which I'm not like a big fan of Wix. It makes things easier. I'm actually more of a fan of Squarespace. So my new website is built in Squarespace.
That's actually an interesting thing because you're right, because the portfolio sites as it stands is usually other creatives looking at your work when you're looking at other creatives' work, yeah. Not necessarily prospective businesses looking at your work. So the angle is quite different.
Yeah, Behance, I feel like, is kind of, for me, a little bit become like a very high-quality Pinterest. Okay, so let's move on to now you're working from home. You've got some stuff to do, whether it is your personal stuff or you're working on clients. But let's talk about the fact that you're going to be doing a hell of a lot less exercise just because you're working at home. Your step count's going to drop to near zero. The fridge is right there. So I really recommend that in between your breaks, you try to get out, take the dog for a walk, do some kind of social distancing friendly form of exercise. So maybe right at the beginning of the day, you go for a run. In the evening, you take the dog for a walk. And in the day, maybe you get a little home workout in. I would say, I mean, next to my desk, I have a yoga mat, which I don't tend to do. I don't do a lot of yoga. I'm very bad at it. But I do tend to stretch on it because my sitting for this long at the desk does tend to like lock up your muscles and that kind of thing. If you've got a stability ball, that's great. So yeah, try and get some exercise in between your breaks. Now, you say you're pretty bad at this kind of thing, hey, Luke?
Yeah, no, I also have a yoga mat. I just look at it. The breaks in between, it's taking some discipline. Like, I think at the moment, the exercise I'm getting is between here and the fridge. So all this advice is actually for me at the moment. So contents of your fridge becomes like a little bit like a staring into a fire. Like it becomes hypnotizing. You're like, wait, maybe behind that Tupperware is something that I haven't noticed before. You know,
yeah. Or it's like what are all these condiments doing here? Why do I have three kinds of mustard and 16
can I combine these? Can I combine these and get a Michelin star? You know, it's like
I think your issue is more that you tend to go the other way to me, where you get obsessed with stuff and you tend to not take breaks.
Yeah, so I think that I've caught myself where I go 4.5 hours, 5 hours, one go without staring up from looking up from the screen. But my wife is really good at that now. And now it's like, Lucas, get up. I'm like, oh, okay, get up. And I shuffle around, you know, like take a break. Yeah. Because what I'm noticing is my back is just like becoming like a haunch from it. So, and at least again, having people around, and we all are now our little community. I know it's social distancing, but we still have our loved ones close to us and we can help each other.
Yeah.
And she's been helping me a lot.
Yeah. So, you know, bitch at each other and say, get up and go for a walk. And here I will just shout out to a friend. I've got a friend who's a personal trainer. His name's Richard Woolrich. And you can find him on Instagram at Richard Woolrich. And Woolrich is spelled wool. And then rich like Richie Rich. So he's posting workouts on his Instagram that you can follow, kind of home workouts, bodyweight workouts. If you scroll back through his feed, you'll find lots and lots of workouts. Otherwise, you could just YouTube stuff, YouTube yoga workouts, all that kind of thing if you want to do that. It's all there. But I think the key in my case, the key thing is get it done at the beginning of the day, because in the afternoon, I'm just terrible with that. I stop giving any shits by the time I get to 4 o'clock.
And then the added benefit of this is it helps with a stronger immune system. So if anything, if work is not the motivation, it helps be the motivation.
Yeah, especially now. Okay, then I think, not lastly, but we want to move on to staying in touch. So we talked about physical health, but now mental health. So yeah, I've been listening to a lot of content, reading a lot of content about the effects psychologically of working remotely. And a lot of people are not ready for that. They've been working in an office and or they just haven't been working 5 days a week from home. So that's going to have an effect, especially on people who are extroverts. Introverts, I think, can handle it a little bit better. They tend to get recharged by being at home alone. But extroverts are going to suffer. So if you're an extrovert or if you're working in a team, try to organize meetups at the beginning and the end of the day over video chat, just to keep those social relationships going. If you're in a company that's working remotely, then just to keep the culture going, because I think the culture of companies is going to suffer as when you're working from home and you have no contact with anyone else in your business and you're not spending time at the office, suddenly it just becomes generic work, right?
You do something really well that I really find interesting. Your group of guys that you meet with, you call it?
Accountability group.
Accountability groups. I think that's a nice way of us just motivating each other, having a group of friends and colleagues that you can go like, can moan at, and then they can encourage, you know, like give you a bit of advice. Because it's very easy to get in these groups and just moan about stuff. It's that angle in that has to be motivational.
Actually, I didn't have that in my notes, but it might be useful. So I do something called an accountability group. Myself and three friends, we tend to meet for lunch every Monday, although obviously not now, but we're staying in touch over a WhatsApp group and we're having calls. And basically the idea is that every week we get together and we cover four topics, which are health, wealth, self, and relationships. So we talk about health, nutrition, and exercise. We talk about wealth. What are we doing in our businesses? What's the plan for the coming week? What did we do last week? Self. So this is usually about what are you reading? What are you listening to? And, you know, like, what are you feeling? Like, what are you going through right now? And then relationships, whether it's with your partner or your spouse or with your friends, just kind of chat through it. And for me, accountability is a very powerful motivator, because I'm a people pleaser, so I can't go to a meeting and say, oh, I didn't do anything last week, but that I said I was going to do, hence to force me to do stuff.
You could just lie.
Yeah, I'm also less evil than you, so yeah.
Yeah, I was very, very productive this week.
Just like make up like a full story, like, oh, guys, I wrote a book. It's amazing. Yeah, so besides meetings in the morning, maybe either in the morning, in the evening, or both, set up those WhatsApp groups, set up a Slack channel if you're using that. It doesn't have to be work-related, just to stay in touch. Because if you don't do those social things, if you don't keep in touch, then there are some threats and obstacles that we kind of want you to be aware of. Number one being cabin fever, especially for extroverts. I mean, Luke, you've been forced to spend quite a lot of time at home recently because of obviously your health. Do you have, I mean, what would you recommend, or what's your experience of that been?
Were you forced to stay home? Here's the positive side of it. You start appreciating people. For months I was alone here. And now I just the idea of having a quick cup of coffee with someone is rad. It's such a nice thing. I don't take it for granted. And we take social interaction very, very for granted. I prefer making phone calls versus texting, because it's more personal. I can hear the person's voice. Again, the positive side of this thing, I think, because people who live in cities, we've turned into like these lonely people surrounded by people. And now we're going to be lonely people not surrounded by people. And that, I think, is going to force us now to interact again in a more meaningful way.
Yeah.
But there's another thing that I found that saved me was my pets. I think adopting a pet, if you're responsible and you can take care of them and have the means to do it, to beat this type of blues or depression, there's a reason why you get therapy animals and stuff like that, is because you tend to... You look for that something to take care of. And if it's people or something to communicate, yeah, like I talk to my dogs all the time. It's very therapeutic.
Yeah.
And also, I think you were talking about people that are giving up their dogs at the moment as an excuse for this. And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. It's been doing the rounds on Facebook of people bringing their pets into shelters like DARG and SPCA and giving them up because they think they can get coronavirus. Well, that's what they say. But we know that anyone from DARG is immediately going to tell them, no, you can't. So I think it's just an excuse. They don't want the responsibility anymore. Here's an excuse, and they're getting rid of their pets. So there is this call to foster an animal if you can. So especially if you are in the unfortunate position of being single and isolated in an apartment by yourself, look into that. That's a pretty good idea. Yeah. Another thing that you can try, which I'm actually going to be trying tonight, is a few of my friends, better friends than you, Lucas, are having our first remote dinner party. We're using Google Hangouts. We're all going to cook our separate meals in our separate homes and then meet up and essentially have a laptop pointed at us, and then, you know, there's going to be a lot of technical issues and crosstalk where people are just talking over each other, but it could work. And I think in the business side of it, have a company drinks on Friday. You know, if you are part of a company or if you work with other people, or if it's just on a personal level, get together on Friday for an hour or so to have drinks over Google Hangouts and chat. I think we're going to see so much creativity pointed at solving the social isolation problems, and I'm looking forward. I mean, like what's happening in Italy with the balcony singing and all that. People, the communities are suddenly connecting.
So good, eh? So good. I love those videos. There's another silver lining to this.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's kind of wrap it up with some tools and resources. I just did kind of, these are from what's on our bookshelves, the websites we use, and some apps that we more or less don't use. So first of all, Microsoft Teams, Zoom, and Google Hangouts have all kind of opened up their premium features for their free users. So in Zoom's case, which we're using now, you can have an unlimited conversation between two people. That's fine. But if you want more than two people, then it limits you to 40 minutes. So what they've done is they've opened it up so you can have as many people as you want, but the time limit is still 40 minutes. Google Hangouts, I think, is now totally open. And I think Microsoft Teams, they've also opened that up. There are some apps for time tracking like Paymo, Toggle, and Todoist. I started with Toggle.
Have you used any of this? Is it Toggle?
Okay. I've used Toggle. Tessa uses Paymo and absolutely swears by it. I haven't used Todoist at all. I have tried Trello and Asana for project management. I haven't used Basecamp myself, which is the guys who wrote Remote. They own Basecamp. So yeah, as I said, when I started out, I was going to track my time and use accounting software to track my invoices. I now have a shoebox. So what I do, because I'm lazy, is that I use Google Calendars and I plan and record my entire day in Google Calendar, which is as simple as just dragging a little box and then saying, I'm working on this client. I put it in for an hour. If I work over that, I drag it longer. And then I just rearrange little blocks of time. So that's both for me a planner for the day and also a record of the time I put in. So as long as I do that pretty assiduously, I end up with a system that works for me, and it's cheap and easy. What kind of stuff do you do to record your time and plan your projects?
Oh my God. Okay. So I'm probably, what happens is I've looked at a lot of these apps, and I do find my calendar works. In the mornings, I go to-do list and I write it down and I tick it off. And I'm sure everybody's rolling their eyes at me like, ugh. But for me, I go, there's a list of 16 things here that I have to do. I have to be at an appointment. It's still me planning it, just not typing it. And there's something nice I can hold on to. So that's just me. And yes, all these, this is great that people, you can track your behavior and go back to it. So accounting software is a whole different ballgame, I suppose. But as it stands, I have, as long as you have a centralized point to make reference to, whether it be your calendar or that, it's just the easiest thing. If I have to start spreading it a lot around on a whole bunch of different apps, I get a little bit target blindness, or I just give up on something.
Yeah.
So I'm still very much analog on that one, but I work very digitally. I like to figure out digital workflows, how to share things quicker, how to get things to the client faster, and get feedback on those things in a better, concise way. And that digital comes into play very, very well.
Yeah. And a lot of these apps, things like Toggle, are all-in-one solutions that do track time and invoicing and all that kind of thing. So just pick one, experiment, give it a whirl, and see if it works for you. And so lastly, some books. A lot of this information is based on Remote by Jason Fried and David Heinemeier Hansen. must be Scandinavian, I think. There's Deep Work by Cal Newport. Then there's a book called Miracle Mornings by Hal Elrod. And I think their byline is win the morning, win the day. And essentially a miracle morning is an hour that you set aside in the early morning and you break it down into, say, if it's 15 minutes of exercise, 15 minutes of meditation, 10 minutes of planning your day, 10 minutes of visualization, 5 minutes of affirmations, whatever it might be, you can kind of create your own miracle morning. But I found that quite a very useful tool in my sabbatical year. Then for those of you who are, you know, feel like a little bit overwhelmed, a little bit scared of what's coming our way in South Africa, there's, I think Stoicism has gained a lot of popularity in the last few years. So there's an author named Ryan Halliday. His most well-known book is The Obstacle is the Way. But I think most of his, his books are about Stoicism and how to weather the storm by accepting that the obstacle, like the thing that's hitting you, is how you learn, it's how you grow.
That's very apt for what's happening at the moment. I've done my research on Stoicism, but when I say research, not reading the books on it, just watching the YouTube videos on it. Which is very, very superficially, but it's such a make the best of a bad situation kind of mentality. There was this one of the anecdotes that one of the speakers spoke about. I think it was Henry Ford was a big practicer of Stoicism, whether you agree with whatever his background was. But he had this moment when one of his factories was burning down, and he told his son to go and get his mother. She's never going to see a fire like this again. It's just this idea of like, he can rebuild this. It's not the end of the world. It is hectic, but you're going to have to rebuild. And making peace with that process is a good one. Absolutely. And the obstacle is the way. You can now build a better factory. You can now be more prepared financially. You can now work out your next plan of action based on all the information you get from essentially a crisis.
Yeah. And this is going to be probably one of the biggest crises in human history here. So I think if we want to wrap things up, I would say that probably the most healthy way to approach it is to look at, find the positive where you can. It's going to be, over the next few weeks are going to be a shit show, but all we can do is try to maintain some sense of hope, do what we can to protect ourselves and other people, and learn and grow as much as we can in this, so that when we come out of it, we're better at working, we're more creative, we're more organized, and we've set ourselves up for success once the world recovers. So yeah, I think that wraps it up for this episode. If you did find any of that content interesting or useful, please share it with anyone who is now put in the position where they have to work remotely. And otherwise, take care of yourselves. Any last thoughts from you, Luke?
Wash your hands, don't touch your face.
You know, my eyes have been itchy all day. It's been driving me crazy. Mm.
Cool, guys. Good luck out there, man.
Yeah, good luck out there. Stay strong, and we'll chat to you soon.